It is Monday, which means it's time for the DL Debate Chat. And I'm joined now by Brendan Devaney, presenter of the DL Debate. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Michaela.
You haven't joined us this morning in studio.
No, do you know what, Michaela? I do a bit of a day job sometimes as well.
Right, so. You do, right?
Aye, surprises a lot of people. People think I'm full time at Highland. I'm like, no, I leave that to professionals.
Don't know about that. Anyway, Brendan, a huge weekend in terms of club action here in Donegal.
Yeah, massive again. You know, we've had a brilliant club championship. Of course, it's been, I suppose, pushed on as well, Michaela, by the new rules. Teams having to come out and play a bit more attacking elements to the game, and a bit more exciting. And of course, you know, the two semi-finals were a great showing, and Gidor and Niamh Connell coming through. Two kind of different games, you know, I suppose, from a Gidor perspective. They went five down at one stage at the start of the first, say, 25 minutes in that match. Michael's playing me a bit of a breeze, but there's a real well-coached team ethic be Gidor. You know, they don't rely on any one or two players. Mm. It's a real team effort, and they showed a lot of control in the second half, and in the final quarter, they outscored Michael 6 points to one. And there's a few goal opportunities in there for St. Michael's, but I think the better team won. And then yesterday we had another epic at the park, going to extra time. This new coming four Masters team showing a lot of ability, a lot of class. But the old war dog that is Niamh Connell in the end coming through. And again, you know, when it went into extra time, four Masters going three up, you thought it was their game at that point, you know, because people get tired. There's less scoring generally in extra time. But Kevin McGinnigan goals not only swung the scoreboard, but the momentum, and Niamh Connell seized it, and they're into yet another final. And I would say, from all the football I've seen, Gidor certainly for me probably the best team this season, Michaela, but certainly the experience and the ability, and I suppose some of the new players coming in to Niamh Connell make them a real danger, very, very hard final to call.
Funny, there was somebody yesterday had made the comment of how strong football in the Gidor area is. They said they were at the match, I think, and they says the turnout and just seems to be the appetite for it in the area. But I suppose that's right across Donegal with these clubs.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard to figure that out with tradition. You know, if you're saying there's different, I suppose, population bases don't tend to get what other areas do. And you're right, tradition is something, but I suppose for the likes of Niamh Connell, they didn't win their first championship since till 2005. But they've really built something now where I suppose everybody in the area wants to play for the football team right across the board, you know, whether it be underage, ladies, you know, whatever. So that is a big effect then on getting people, I suppose, everyone bought in. You tend not to lose other players to different sports and different things like that. And even though soccer would be very strong in Gidor, there has always been a huge history of GAA there. And the amazing thing, I suppose, for them, Michael, is there's quite a few kind of injured Gidor players and players that are travelling that they've gone away from them, and a lot of them are real top class. There's three or four even being the county squad. So I was talking it through with a Gidor player last night. There's probably seven players there that are away, and if they were back, that we would all be in trouble. So that makes, I suppose, the job that Ronan McNeilis has done even more. And I suppose 3 years ago they met each other in the final, and it was complete one-way traffic. Gidor probably were surprised to be there, and listen, they were no match at all for Niamh Connell. So a lot has changed in those 3 years, Michaela, because Gidor has certainly been in there, maybe slight favourites in some people's minds, because Niamh Connell probably haven't played their best this season, but they've managed to win when they needed to.
Yeah. So no doubt you'll be talking about this later on the show. Who is joining you this week, Brendan?
Yeah, in studio, Pádraig Helferty, our own Pádraig Helferty, Brendan Kilcoyne, who have been all over the club championship this year. So great having the two of them up. We'll be very cosy this evening up there. I love having people in studio, Michaela, as you know.
Yeah, makes a difference.
Nice to see the whites of the eyes, so I know if they're telling me the truth or not. But yeah, Michaela, they're coming up to the studio, and we're going to wrap up. We're going to talk a wee bit. It goes intermediate finals coming up next week. We have the junior final pairing of Kieran Dutter, who we beat in last year's final, playing Letterkenny Gaels, who came through an epic semi-final with Niamh Breed. And as well as that, then, Michaela, I've been looking to get time this last few weeks. I know you're a Tyrone woman.
Mm-hmm.
I Roan listeners and Derry listeners. I didn't want to leave them out, but there's been so much happening in the club championship right across the board. So Michael McMullen's actually going to come in as well. And the semi-finals in Gador, Errol Kieran versus Trillick last year's final. Loch McCorry are playing Carrigmore, another one. And then Glenn Mahara, who are managed by Rory Kavanagh, of course, they're playing Mahara Felt and Sloughneil Newbridge. So massive games, Derry and Tyrone coming up as well.
And it's such a busy time. You know, there's numerous games on every week. It is, I suppose, hard to keep on top of it all.
Yeah, well, do you know, Michael McMullen was supposed to come on, Michaela, between me and you and anybody's listening.
There'd be a few the thousands listening.
The thousands, yeah. But he was supposed to come on the last few weeks, Michaela. And every time I looked at it, time is just, you would know it there yourself. Sometimes you think that, oh, I've got an extra 10 or 15 minutes. And you get into a conversation with somebody and it just goes fast. So I've been saying to Mal, I might get you on this Monday for a wee recap. He's like, no problem. Then I'm about to say no. And then last week again, I smiled, do you know what? Can we leave it? So then this week probably could
be. And I'd imagine, Brendan, a conversation with you isn't short either.
I just asked the questions, Michaela.
I can see how the time flies.
Well, hey, Michael McMullen's a great man. He's such a great guy for helping out Highland Radio. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of updates and different things for us, Michaela. He's one of them people where. And you know it yourself doing the show there, that you, when you look to people and ask for them, there's a lot of people always very accommodating. And those people are great because you know they'll always be there when you need them.
Yeah.
And it's great to rely on people like that. And he's great at his job. He'll always give you a great detail on the games.
Aye, absolutely. Well, that is after the 7 o'clock news tonight, and Brendan Devaney will be in studio, presenter of the DL Debate, and it's podcasted as well then afterwards, isn't it, Brendan?
That's it, podcast at nineradio.com and wherever you get your podcasts, yeah, tune in. That's the way of it now. People like to often say they catch it at different times heading for walks.
Yeah.
So all good, Michaela.
That's
yeah,
it. Great, Brendan, I'll let you get back to the day job. Thanks a million.
No problem.
That is Brendan Devaney there, presenter of the DL Debate. A couple of your comments coming in. We were chatting just before 11 about the Irish language in school and the number of exemptions that have been sought. The spoken language is not taught in schools at all. We teach children how to read and write. We need to put more emphasis on speaking. That is what I was saying as well. Whenever I studied Irish, that it was just about learning you know, the grammar for your exam. And, you know, I was chatting to Donna Marie there. There was one of the ads was in Irish and I was saying, you know, I could pick out, I know that says and now, but my understanding of the Irish language is very, very limited. There's little point in having our young people fluent in Irish, as I don't think it would be much use in Australia where they have to go because they can't afford to live in their own country. But I think it's about having a bit of heritage, isn't it? And, you know, being able to say to somebody, you know, that I, you know, hold a conversation with somebody if you come home or, you know, if there's somebody in Australia as well. I don't think it depends on where you live in the world, whether you can use your Irish language or not. I like to do my Christmas shopping locally here in Donegal. I'd encourage and commend the local Christmas clubs, which make it helpful for families. And I like to think local secondary students could avail the opportunity to earn some cash with the extra business when people shop local. Christmas is not meant to cause stress. Peace and goodwill is the message of Christ, the longest part of the word Christmas. Another listener says, I feel Michaela is very down on the NFL game yesterday. The amount of tourists and tourism it brought into the country is amazing. The Irish government gave over €9 million to bring the NFL to Croke Park. Why is no one commenting on that? I did say that it was, you know, a great spectacle, and obviously it was very Americanized the way that, you know, they had the halftime performance and things like that. But I don't think it was a negative thing. I did also highlight that it was a huge cost to the state to bring it here. But another listener had asked, is it something we should include in the All-Ireland final day at Croke Park? And I don't know if that would dilute the national game and what we know it as. But, you know, if you have an opinion on that, get in touch with us here. Another listener says, I wasn't at the NFL the weekend, but watched most of it on TV. It was a great show and actually amazing to have it here, but it was all funded by our government, the Irish government that doesn't have money for other things. The Irish are getting just as bad as the Americans with overdoing things yesterday, and the days around it are great for tourism.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Highland Radio Time Checks brought to you by Airgrid, the operator and developer of Ireland's electricity grid. Airgrid, powering up communities, powering up Ireland. The time is?
The time is now 18 minutes past 11. I'm joined now on the line by Marina Carlin, who is the chairperson of the Rosemount Residents Association in Letterkenny. Good morning, Marina.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Good morning.
I can hear you perfectly.
Yeah.
So a transporter trailer was stolen from the Rosemount Lane area on Sunday evening, which was yesterday. What do we know about this incident, Marina?
Well, what we know so far is that it's a small red trailer. There's a bit of damage to the passenger side rear light. It's quite an old trailer. It was hand-built probably in the 1970s. It would be suitable for a small car or a van.
Mm-hmm.
And it was stolen at 1846 yesterday. What looks like a white Skoda Octavia or Ford Mondeo car turned down Rosemount. It stopped, it took the trailer, and then it continued to drive down to the Pierce Road. And it's been reported to the Garda, and also it's on our Rosemount resident Facebook page. So, you know, we're looking for any information about this.
Mm-hmm.
If they could contact the Garda, or if they could contact our Facebook page, because we have a Rosemount resident. It's called the Rosemount Residents Association.
And that's quite good detail. Yeah. And I suppose, you know, a lot of people would notice a car, transporter, trailer attached to a vehicle.
Yeah.
So hopefully there is someone out there that would know or have any detail of it.
Yeah. And it's red, so it's quite, you know, it's distinctive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's an old trailer, so that's also distinctive, yes.
And I suppose this is a huge loss to the owner because, you know, it's not cheap to purchase things like this.
No, and the thing is, what we're trying to do is, one of the reasons that we have the Rosemount Residents Association is that we're looking out for each other in the community. So this is good because people are coming, you know, with
mm-hmm.
different pieces of information, so that's really good.
Yeah,
we're really pleased about that.
It's great to have residents associations like this, and I suppose it provides that peace of mind to others that everybody in the area is looking out for each other.
Yeah, well, what we're sort of saying is, like, we've set up the Rosemount Residents Association last year, and it's basically to preserve the spirit of Old Letterkenny,
mm-hmm.
which we have here. We have a very wonderful spirit here that's like what you would have found in the past. We're actually currently seeking to get architectural conservation area status at the moment. We've put in a submission to Donegal County Council, and we're looking for support for that because we're trying to keep, you know, what the sense of community and the architectural conservation, the heritage of Rosemount. But we're also in a time where, you know, individualism is being promoted more than connection, and connection is really, really important. You know, it's important for people's well-being and everything else. So I think the idea of communities is becoming, you know, absolutely much more vital. So what we're trying to do here in Rosemount is to keep that for the future. We're kind of a link between the past and the future, and we want to keep it for the future generations. We've had great responses so far. We've been up the town on Culture Night, and we were up the town on Saturday, and we're gathering support, and we've had fantastic responses from people, and I think that it's something that we really want to have. So it's like Church Lane, for example, and they've been very supportive of us.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have been supportive, and even among the wider diaspora, because We had an article in the paper. Paddy Walsh did a fantastic article for us in summer, and one of the points we were making was that even among the diaspora out in the world, that, you know, Rosemount is one of those areas that they're carrying with them as kind of symbolic of old Letterkenny.
Yeah, and it's people's identity as well.
Yes. And the whole idea, we're very lucky here that we've such an amazing community. Like even this morning is an example of that, because we're here for each other, you know, so it's not, you know, even though it's awful that that happened, it's like we're all kind of looking out for each other. So it's a really wonderful thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's what we're kind of, that's why we're trying at the minute to, you know, to maintain Rosemount as it was for the future generations, because this is something that once this is lost, it, you know, we can never replace it. We can never replace it. And the thing is, there's so much research now that's linking, you know, the sense of being connected to your community as positive for well-being and positive for mental health. Mm. So that's what we're trying to do, because I think in the future this is going to be seen as so much more valuable, you know, because we need it.
Yeah.
We're social animals. We need to be connected to other people.
Yeah, well, as you say, Marina, those efforts will continue. And I suppose I would just encourage anybody with information regarding that red car transporter trailer that has been stolen to, as you mentioned there, get in touch with yourselves on the Facebook page or contact Gardaí here in Letterkenny. Thank you so much, Marina, for raising that with us.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to change conversation now. I mentioned at the start of the programme there during the newspaper review that the Taoiseach has more or less ruled out a border poll before 2030. He says more is to be done, no border poll before 2030. So that's according to Micheál Martin. Somebody who I think would disagree with that is Donegal Deputy Padraig McLaughlin. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So this is something obviously your party, Sinn Féin, has been campaigning on for quite a while now. Do you think these comments from Micheál Martin are disappointing?
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I don't think Micheál Martin has any interest in the United Ireland whatsoever. That's been his comments repeatedly. You know, you have to have a plan. You know, if you advocate for United Ireland, you have to have a plan, a process that takes you there. And what Sinn Féin have said repeatedly over recent years is that it is inevitable that we will have a border poll. It's in the Good Friday Agreement. It is inevitable. It will happen. I would imagine, 2030 and around that period. And you must prepare. So we've talked about a citizens' assembly where you look at issues like what kind of health service would we have, what would our constitution look like, education, how would you protect the unionist community in the north. That's the way you responsibly prepare. You don't do what the British did with Brexit, where they went over the cliff edge and it was a disaster. And that's all we've asked for repeatedly. And what Micheál Martin keeps talking about is, what, you know, reconciliation, we all need to get along, and, you know, someday later. I just don't believe he's serious. And I think if you look at Colm Eastwood's distancing from Fianna Fáil over this matter, Leo Varadkar's comments, you can see that Micheál Martin is way behind the curve. And eventually he will be replaced as leader of Fianna Fáil, and then we might have a serious conversation.
But do you think that, you know, we're into the end of 2025, so in reality, 4 years before a border poll, do you honestly think that that is enough time for people to understand, you know, the implications of a border poll?
Yeah, I do. And I just think that in everything that Micheál Martin has said over recent years, I believe that his Ireland, the Ireland that he believes in, stops at Dundalk, it stops at Bridgend, you know, it stops at Lifford. I mean, he talked years ago about Fianna Fáil organising in the north of Ireland. They never did. They formed an alliance with the SDLP. Mm-hmm. The SDLP has walked away from that now, because I think we all see that Fianna Fáil, under Micheál Martin's leadership, is not a United Ireland party. And I'm sorry to say that, because lots of ordinary Fianna Fáil members I know in Donegal do want a United Ireland. They would want to see a plan. You know, he's the Taoiseach. He's the leader of the country. And he won't even agree to an Oireachtas committee on Irish unity. He doesn't want to have the conversation. He wants to kick it down the road again and again. And I think I think it's reckless, because it will happen and we won't have prepared properly for it.
And in terms of Micheál Martin saying that there's still work to be done on fulfilling the potential of the Good Friday Agreement, what do you understand he means by that?
Well, I find the comments, you know, I've heard him say before, but it never, I suppose, does dilute the shock. The Good Friday Agreement was 27 years ago. You know, 27 years, over a generation ago. You know, we have power sharing government. It's not perfect, but it's there. It's been in place. And I just think he needs to be honest. I do not want a United Ireland. Just say it out loud. I don't want to prepare for it. I don't want to talk about it. Like, here we are in Donegal, and, you know, we see this huge movement of workers across the border every single day. We see the impact of partition so negatively on Derry, Westrone and Donegal. We're working together. We're trying to undo it, unravel it. And, you know, it's so clear that on this small island, the economic benefits of United Ireland, they're overwhelming. You know, it's a positive conversation. It's a chance to reset our country in terms of our health services, our education systems, agreeing how we deal with housing. So this isn't just about uniting 26 with 6. This is about a conversation about how we make this country better by uniting it. And anybody who cares about United Ireland, who wants it, is up for that. You know, we want it. We've tried in Sinn Féin to work with civil society. You know, we've had events in Donegal, ones organised by Sinn Féin, ones organised by a range of civil society to discuss it. We've tried to do, without being in government, we've tried to develop this again and again. But what we have with Micheál Martin, as long as he's there, he doesn't want United Ireland. I'm absolutely convinced about that. He sees Ireland as his wee Republic of Ireland. And of course, that fails people in so many ways.
Do you feel that he doesn't want United Ireland because, you know, you argued that many would be in favour of United Ireland, but there's also that other cohort that they're not against the idea of United Ireland, but they don't understand and can't see the benefits of it. Do you think he's in that same boat, or you just think he doesn't want a United Ireland?
Yeah, I mean, and that's a really important question, because those of us who advocate for a United Ireland, you know, and we agreed in the Good Friday Agreement that we would all peacefully try to achieve that. And that was a massive achievement to move people away from conflict that lasted, you know, 25 years to move towards a peaceful advancement of it. And I think anybody who wants United Ireland will go out and argue the case and advocate. And what's really interesting is that Fianna Fáil used to tease Fine Gael about being weak on United Ireland and that they were the Republican Party. And, you know, Micheál Martin, I think, has ruined all of that, because Leo Varadkar is much stronger now, the former Taoiseach. He's made very important speeches in recent times. You have Colm Eastwood, you know, with the SDLP. You know, so a United Ireland needs a whole range of people. I'm very clear, Sinn Féin can never achieve a United Ireland on our own. We want to see as many people as possible in that discussion, advocating. It's a positive discussion. It's one that has a chance to reset our island in terms of the generations to come. And Micheál Martin, I think, is stuck in the past. I think he's stuck in this mentality of, you know, we have our Republic of Ireland. This is our country. And I just don't think he's one bit serious about it. These latest comments to me confirm, you know, my view. And, you know, it's a pity that the people in Fianna Fáil who want United Ireland tolerate this, never challenge him, and have allowed him to destroy their credibility on the issue. I hope the next leader of Fianna Fáil has a very different mentality. As long as Micheál Martin is there, he's ruined their credibility on this issue.
Do you think, though, Padraig, that this kind of, like, I'm somebody who lives in Northern Ireland, obviously crosses the border to work, but I can't at the minute, like, I don't feel I'm stuck in the past, but I can't see the social and economic benefits of a united Ireland at this stage. And that's where I feel that maybe there isn't, I know Sinn Féin has been campaigning on this for so long, but there isn't enough dialogue to, you know, convince people maybe of my generation. There's so many people of different views that this would be a positive. Like, I feel that maybe, you know, by 2030, it's too soon, that we do need more work to be done on this, and that we do need these discussions, like proper discussions rather than campaigning, to start.
We see, I agree with you, but we need to start. It needs to start at some stage. And, you know, like, I'm very confident in the economic benefits of United Ireland. I have no fear. I can see nothing but positives of Donegal, Derry, Tyrone being one region without any, you know, legal impediments to us, you know, achieving our full potential. Partition has done huge harm to our region. I mean, no region has been more affected by this artificial border that's been put in place. But the conversation has to start. He actually has to start to win hearts and minds. Micheál Martin has no interest in doing that. He's not an advocate for United Ireland. I don't believe he's a Republican in any way, shape or form. And I'm sorry to see that he's the leader of Fianna Fáil, because here's the thing, you know, Sinn Féin on our own cannot win this referendum. We want everybody who genuinely advocates for United Ireland to join the discussion. So, I mean, people like yourself who, you know, are not sure or certain, that's the reason why you need to prepare. And, you know, it will come.
Because I feel at this stage, the argument is kind of maybe missing, you know, the working people, you know, the generation of people that, you know, don't remember the troubles, that, you know, it's us that, you know, it needs to focus on to outline the positives and negatives as well, that maybe, you know, that generation's being missed too.
Yeah, and you see, you know, it's not just about convincing unionism. It's about convincing all of us that this would make our lives better, you know. And, you know, that's what those of us who advocate for United Ireland, like, I passionately believe that the lives of all of our people on the island of Ireland would be improved. We see the damage that the Tory party and, sadly, the Labour party are doing to the north, where they, you know, are holding back the potential. It's just a small, remember, the population of Britain, or if you want to use the term the United Kingdom, I think is over 60 million. It's only 1.5 million people in the north. It's not even, I think it's about the same size as the city of Leeds. So it just doesn't have any impact on the political spectrum. Whereas in Ireland, 1.5 million is a huge part of our population, you know, and would have a big influence. It would just be, I mean, I think for where we live in the border areas, the benefits are huge. But for all of Ireland, the economic benefits will be there. So I'm clear about that. I'm confident about that. I want to have the conversation. I want to have a plan. But Micheál Martin has no interest in that. I don't believe we would have had a Good Friday Agreement if Micheál Martin had been the leader of Fianna Fáil back then. I don't think he's any commitment. He would have kicked it down the road, said you need to talk more and talk more and talk more. 27 years since the Good Friday Agreement, and he's still talking about we need to work at it. You know, that's the sad thing for me, is that you now have somebody like Micheál Martin who just has no interest. And as long as he's the Taoiseach or in power, it will be stymied, it will be held back. And I think that's a tragedy, because at some point, the population in the north will get to a point. And in the very near future, you can see that. You can see the opinion polls. But what we're looking for is a proper planned preparation.
And how important, Padraig, is that citizens' assembly in this then?
Well, a citizens' assembly is where you bring in all the voices, you know, where you thrash out, and you would have to take it in segments. You know, how would our health service improve across the island? I mean, the health service in the north, as you know, has been starved of money, has been dismantled by the Tories and now the Labour Party. It's in terrible shape. We have a strange health system in the south where, you know, a very large percentage of people have to get private health insurance to protect themselves, you know, so all of that needs to be looked at. We need to look at our education system in the United Ireland. We need to look at a new constitution. You know, we're going to have a new constitution in due course. And then protections for unionism. I mean, how does the unionist identity be protected in the United Ireland? And I'm looking forward to all of that. I'm excited about that. I'm positive about all of that. But unfortunately, what's going to happen is if we leave people like Fianna Fáil, Micheál Martin, leader of Fianna Fáil, in charge, we'll go over a cliff edge, like what happened with Brexit in Britain, and that's a disaster. Look at the outworkings of Brexit for the British people. So it's just my frustration, and it's a deep frustration, because I've seen so many positive conversations in recent years, but as you say, if you don't have somebody in the driving seat who wants this, Micheál Martin does not want this, mm-hmm. then people like yourself and Winning Hearts and Minds can't be done. It's really, really deeply frustrating. But hopefully Micheál Martin's time won't be too long, and we have somebody who's serious about it who replaces him.
Deputy Padraig McLaughlin, Sinn Féin Chief Whip and Spokesperson on Fisheries and the Marine. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. Now, welcome back to the show. It's Michaela Clark in this morning for Greg Hughes. I'm joined now by Adam Maguire, who is the author of Bail Out, The Bail Out Babies. I suppose, Adam, good morning to you first, but we'll start with the title. What is Bail Out Babies?
The Bail Out Babies is about the young generation of adults now, the people who are kind of stuck due to the housing crisis. And I call them the Bail Out Babies because they're the people who would have been born during the Celtic Tiger, if you think kind of from early mid-90s all the way through to 2007. They're now 18 up into their kind of mid-30s. So they're the people who would have been born into, you know, this seeming endless prosperity. They probably would have grown up thinking that was for them. But by the time they became adults and by the time they came out of college, it was all gone. And they're now dealing with the fallout from the bailout and the crash, which we're still picking up the pieces of really today, especially in housing.
And how do you feel that this has reshaped this next generation in Ireland?
Well, I think, you know, it's not just about the fact that they can't get a house. Obviously, there's a lot more that leads to. So, for example, it makes it much harder for them to socialise and maybe to find partners because they're living at home for much longer. We know there's a huge cohort of young adults who are still living at home with their parents far longer than would have been the case in the past. And that makes it harder to date, you know, because just on a very practical basis, you know, where are you going to bring them when you want to go back of an evening? Even if you have very understanding parents, it's not going to be an easy thing to do. It creates tension in the household as well, because you have all of these adults falling over each other in a house that, you know, was never meant to hold that many people. And that delays things like, you know, just being able to go out into the world, being able to learn all of the things you're supposed to learn as an adult about, you know, independence and getting by. And it delays them starting families as well, which obviously has a huge impact, because that's something that they choose to do. So there's this huge knock-on effects there, and I think it kind of infantilizes this generation to some degree, that they're kind of forced to still be kids at home, even when they're maybe well-educated and probably mm-hmm. have a good job as well. They come home and they're still essentially children in their parents' houses.
Yeah, because there was CSO data published last week, and we were obviously interested in the Donegal figures, and it showed that the average age in 2023 and 2024 for first-time property buyers was 44. And all those things you talked about, when you see it in black and white like that, it really does hit home, excuse the pun, that this is the reality.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a huge shift in such a short amount of time. It's not that long ago that the average age of a first-time buyer would have been maybe in their mid to late 20s. Then it slipped into the 30s. And now, as you say, it's heading into the 40s, certainly in some counties. And, you know, we used to be the youngest in Europe in terms of moving out of home. Now we're the oldest. You know, the Italians probably think that we're kind of mammy's boys still, because, you know, we're just taking so long to get out of the home because it's just so expensive to do that. And yeah, it has huge impacts. And as I say, not just on the fact that these people can't get a house of their own, but it impacts them socially, it impacts them romantically, it impacts their mental health. I suppose part of the problem as well is that there's no obvious end in sight, mm-hmm. and there's no, you know, people I spoke to when I was researching the book, some of them just said, I just don't think I'll ever be able to buy a home. Others thought, well, you know, if I work hard and save, maybe in 10, 15 years, I'll be able to buy a home, which, you know, you're essentially asking these people to give up their, you know, their young adulthood at a time when they maybe should be going out and experiencing things and living their lives a bit. The only hope they have of getting home is if they, you know, knuckle down and do absolutely nothing other than save. And even then, because house prices rise by so much every year, yeah, there's no promise that 5 years of hard saving will be enough to have a deposit to buy a home of your own.
And it's such a stark contrast to when they were born. They were born in the boom when, you know, everybody was buying houses, didn't matter what price the house was. And now they're struggling with the fallout of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's kind of the real cruelty of this, is that for some of them, certainly the ones who would have been born in the 90s, they would have been old enough to see the Celtic Tiger. Maybe they kind of enjoyed some of the benefits in terms of, you know, going away on nice holidays or their parents buying a nice big house. And they might have seen even their older siblings who went out into the world and were able to get a good job and a home relatively easily. And then that was just taken away from them. Now, that being said, you know, a lot of that, as we know, was kind of built on debt, and, you know, people were getting, you know, 110% mortgages on massively overvalued properties, and their incomes were never going to be able to cover that. And it's not to suggest we should go back to that kind of a situation. But, you know, the pendulum has really swung in the opposite direction now, where people who are on very good incomes and well above average incomes, even they can't get on the property ladder now because of the way prices have increased compared to incomes.
And do you see this as something now that will continue to shape generations to come?
Well, I think so. I mean, you know, obviously there's all sorts of attempts to solve the housing crisis, but even, you know, with ambitious kind of government targets, you know, you're still talking about there being a shortfall in supply of housing versus demand for many, many years to come. So that's kind of the kind of worrying thing about this, is that there's no obvious end in sight to this. And it means that the people who are now maybe in their teens, or even, you know, in pre-teen ages, you kind of wonder, are they facing into the same future? I've young kids myself, and I wonder, you know, will I be dealing with this in, you know, 20 years time or more, when they'll still be living at home at an age when they probably should be out and doing their own thing? And, you know, a lot of people I spoke to, I was really surprised and kind of somewhat depressed by the amount of people I spoke to who were planning to emigrate, and, you know, were well on advanced in terms of their plans to emigrate, because they just thought, well, I'll have a better chance somewhere else. And that's it's a really unusual thing. Obviously, we're a country that's been used to emigration in the past. We tend to though see it during downturns. This is the first time now that we're seeing more Irish people leave the country than come into the country, at a time when the economy is technically booming. It's a very unusual thing, but unfortunately, I think it's a sign that young people here just don't kind of see any prospects in the near future for them, and they're looking elsewhere to see if they have a better chance.
And any of those that you spoke to, did they indicate what they feel needed to change?
I think it really is a simple, and unfortunately no one has the silver bullet on this, but I think it really is a simple thing, that they know that more houses need to be built, and they feel like they need help as well. And, you know, a lot of people were seeing this increase of the Bank of Mam and Dad, as it's called, where people are getting money from their parents. You know, there are some people who are lucky enough to have parents who have that kind of money to give them to get them on the property ladder.
But that's such pressure on the parents as well, you know.
It is huge pressure on the parents, and there's a lot of people who obviously just don't have that money. And I spoke to one older couple who had gotten out what's called a lifetime loan. So basically they'd gotten a loan out on the value of their property and given that money to one of their children to buy a house. And the idea is that, you know, that will be paid off when they die, and that their property is sold. But that's huge pressure as well. Yeah. It's asking a lot of them. And, you know, it also kind of raises this question in my head. You know, are we raising a generation of people who sit and think, well, the only hope I have of getting a home is when my parents die, you know, which would be a horrible thought that people would have to be thinking. Yeah. But if that's kind of the prospect that you have, because if you need to have your parents giving you a leg up, if all the hard work in the world that you're doing isn't enough, that's a real sign of dysfunction in the market.
Yeah, and it's such a sad prospect, I suppose, you know, for parents and these children as well. But unfortunately, you know, as you highlighted there, it's just the reality of so many people nowadays.
It really is, yeah. And it is, you know, obviously this book is focused on the young adults themselves, but there, it does reflect some of the difficulties with the parents, because I'm sure there are parents out there who, you know, are have adult children at home, and they'd love to see them out in mm-hmm. the real world and starting their lives properly. They probably like them out of their hair as well. They probably had a thought in their head, well, by this age, I'll have, you know, my own place and my own freedom, and I'll be able to do this, that and the other. And instead, they're still having to kind of, in some ways, take care of their children. And yeah, you know, there were some cases of people I spoke to of real tension and, you know, real ugliness because of the frustration that was growing in the house with adult children at home. And, you know, it getting to the point of parents, you know, essentially being bullied by their children. Because of this living in close quarters and the amount of frustration that had built up. So, you know, really kind of ugly side effects from all of this beyond the simple fact that people are frustrated at not being able to buy a home.
Yeah, and never mind, you know, the relationships you discussed there, you know, it's that those relationships then with their parents are being damaged as well. And it's, yeah, they just can't seem to win either way.
No, not really. And, you know, I spoke to a psychologist about, you know, the effects that this has. And as she pointed out to me, you know, when you know, people become adults, you know, and they have, you know, their own lives and their own, you know, thoughts and ways of doing things, that's kind of the time they need to go out and live on their own. And, you know, the ideal kind of parent-child relationship then is that you see them, you know, maybe once a week or whatever it might be. You catch up and then they go away and do their own thing. And you know, that's you kind of need that relationship, because if you're forced to live on top of each other when you're two very different people and maybe the parent is still parenting like it's a child, the child is still, you know, responding to the parent like a parent rather than another adult. And it's just stressful, and it, as you say, it leads to just potential for a bad relationship there, as opposed to them being someone that you see from time to time and you can get along lovely with, and then when, you know, you've had enough of them, they can go to their own place and you can, you know, forget all about it.
Yeah. So Adam, where can someone purchase the book?
So it's available in all major bookshops and lots of independent bookshops as well. Available online as well. You can obviously order it online, or you can buy it as an ebook too on the likes of Eason's and the bookshop as well. .ie. So all major bookshops, you should be able to find a copy of it. Hopefully.
Great. Adam Maguire, author of The Bailout Babies, How Ireland's Financial Crash Reshaped the Next Generation and What It Means for the Future. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Highland Radio weather updates brought to you by McIlhenny's. With new season styles arriving daily, discover the latest fashion, footwear and accessories for autumn in store or shop online at McIlhenny's.com today.
Today's weather, any mist and fog will clear this morning. Today will be mainly cloudy with scattered rain and drizzle. Highest temperatures of 14 to 16 degrees. That's quite high for this time of year, is it? It was absolutely beautiful last week. So hopefully maybe the sunshine will come out when we have those nice temperatures. I don't know if that is going to be the case, unfortunately, though. Some of your comments now. Tell Padraig for one and hundreds like me, we are sick of Sinn Féin chatting about United Ireland. There's more important things going on in our lives. They will be in for a big shock when they get their border poll. Look at the state of Northern Ireland and they are empire. That's what I was trying to indicate, that, you know, so many people have so much going on in their lives. People are working, people are caring for children, people are sick, people are looking after sick people, that maybe they're not as invested in a United Ireland. I personally think 2030 for a border poll is very early. I don't think that, based on the evidence that I've heard to date, that a United Ireland would be good. But at the same time, I would not accept it, obviously, if it's the will of the people. But I just think there's not enough evidence there for it to be positive. And that listener says, look at the state of Northern Ireland and Sinn Féin, our empire there. I do think that, you know, it doesn't just depend on Sinn Féin, but there's so many issues both North and South are dealing with, and there just needs to be a lot more discussions on it. I do think a border poll, you know, will happen and should happen, but maybe 2030 is just a bit early. Former Councillor Ian McGarvey says it's about time someone conducted research of what financial implications it would cost to run a Northern Ireland. A United Ireland, I should say. For a border poll to be successful, be 2040 at the earliest. Another listener says, Micheál Martin does not want a united Ireland. We know that by now, but the GFA provides us the mechanism for a border poll whether he agrees or not. The conversation is happening and up and down the whole country, and the government needs to start planning for it now. Yeah, conversations do need to happen, and as Donegal Deputy Padraig McLaughlin was saying there, you know, if they got the Citizens' Assembly up and running, I do think that would be a good start. And, you know, I suppose people like myself have concerns or, you know, don't really understand and can't see the benefits at the minute. So something like the Citizens' Assembly would maybe help that. Another listener says, we need to start preparing for a united Ireland. The Irish government are always reacting to events and never proactively preparing for anything. Nigel Farage could spring a border poll at short notice. Padraig is absolutely correct in his analysis. Another listener says, doesn't surprise me about Micheál Martin. This is the man who said before the election that there was only one side to blame for the Troubles and that it was the IRA. This is how little he knows his history or cares about what happens up there. In relation to the conversation we were having with Mary T. Sweeney earlier, where does Christ come into all this commercial hype? How many children know what this industry is about? And we were discussing Christmas. Is it starting too early in the shops? I personally think that we should at least get Halloween over. I have an 11-year-old boy who has dyslexia. His needs weren't met at school, so I had to get him assessed privately. He is not entitled to an Irish exemption as he needed 2 years of resource time to qualify. If I had been listened to initially, we would have gotten the exemption. The move to secondary school isn't available if you don't have the exemption. I know other parents are in the same situation. Another listener says the decline of the Irish language has a lot to do with its relatively low status as a language of daily life unless you live in a Gaeltacht area. Would he agree? This was a question to Sean, the principal of Colister Alley, who was in earlier. Would he agree its failure is a lot to do with how it's taught? Too much time on grammar and not enough on conversation. That's what he was alluding to, that, you know, there is an awful lot of good work being done, but it does need to be streamlined as well to ensure that people do carry it with them into the future. That's where we have to leave it on the 9 till noon show this morning. John Bredesen is up next on Around the Northwest. Thanks to Carling Orr and to Shannon Wilkin for producing and for all their help on the show today. Good morning.